Good morrow and well met, Brendan.
Welcome to the 21st century, Alan.
The Not a Thing podcast, episode 175, is rolling. I just saw, I guess, sort of a period piece, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. So that kind of ridiculous talk is in my brain right now. So hopefully I don't lapse into it anymore. But we'll get there eventually. We'll get there during the spoiler territory part of the show. Although I'm not gonna spoil it by saying that it was a zombie movie. Instead, we're gonna move on to some stuff near and dear to the podcast heart, which is the White House has come out and put out a plan regarding cybersecurity, and we've talked about privacy rights and cybersecurity and stuff like that on the show lots. So I was kind of excited to pick it up and look at it, and it's fairly long, and it makes a lot of broad proclamations about the state of cybersecurity, but it doesn't really say a lot about what it's going to do kind of in a concrete way. There are a lot of kind of open-ended plans about things and how things are going. And one interesting note about the whole thing, which is multiple pages long, is that it does not mention the word encryption even once, which is 100% broken. I think if there's any word that can be used to as the kind of let's fix things for cybersecurity, it's encryption. And it really should be a thing. We've talked about it numerous times on the show. It should be a thing. It should be much easier to come by and really makes a lot of that pain and stuff go away. I mean, it talks in the White House plan regarding having a strong password and using multiple factor authentication and stuff like that. And I think most of those things are still not things. They're not ready for prime time in a lot of cases for different reasons. The multiple factor authentication, I feel like it's still a little weird, even though everyone has mobile phones. It's still not really standardized, I think, in a way that makes that makes sense. Like, there's still like apps, or it's a text message, or it's an email, or it's some other thing. I think that has to be sorted out into kind of a more standardized way. And then the other part about passwords is that people still pick really bad passwords.
Mine are terrible. My password is always deleted for security.
Don't worry, we'll edit it out in post. Just like how we did in episode number here. Well, it's still important to point out about security, and it's still good to read the notes from there. Although I think a better thing to read rather than the actual press release from the White House is the Electronic Frontier Foundation's takedown of it, which is great. I mean, the Electronic Frontier Foundation is always an advocate for digital privacy rights and really kind of bringing legislation into a much more kind of enlightened era, hopefully. In kind of along with that, there've been a couple kind of troubling things recently, more locally. So more locally, to us anyway, in California, someone in the California legislature, a Democrat, mind you, who's generally, they're generally supposed to be more liberal about things, but unfortunately, they are apparently in the pocket of of those that want to remove encryption from things. So this.
Wait a minute, Alan. You're telling me that there are politicians that are in the pockets of moneyed interests, and the White House put out a press release that speaks in generalities but gives no actual specifics as to how to fix a problem? What world are we living in?
So this California legislator is pushing forward a bill to add backdoors to encrypted systems like mobile phones and email systems and other things like that.
I'd like to name check that person. That's Assemblyman Jim Cooper of California. For shame, sir.
Yes.
For
shame. Yes. Not a thing. Absolutely. Any regular listeners to the show will know that that's a direct kind of antithesis to a lot of how the show works. We like to have things that work, and adding backdoors to encryption fundamentally makes encryption not work. So luckily, we're not the only ones that have recognized this. A California congressperson, so at the federal level, has introduced a bill along with a congressman from New York who's putting together a bill to make federal encryption protected, or rather making encryption protected at the federal level so states can't override it for silly laws like the one that's hopefully not going to pass in California. So encryption hopefully will still be a thing. Cybersecurity is a thing. It's good to see the White House kind of on the side of it, even though it is kind of loose in general. Hopefully something more concrete that will actually be good will come out of that. We're, like I said, big fans of, the internet and making it work, mostly because without the internet, we wouldn't have this podcast.
Yeah, and if anything, it exists to service us. Bring it all together, whatever.
Yeah, right, podcast. Exactly. Better world, something, something, yada, yada, yada. But if you like the internet for this podcast, or rather like this podcast for the internet, and like to contribute, please feel free to, despite the hashtag lizard people that may be in Congress or at the state legislator level. We're still going strong. If you'd like to donate to the show, it'd be great. If you'd like to be on the show as a guest, all you have to have is a thing and an internet connection, and we'll talk about that thing, and everything will be great. It's fun.
I think I can safely say, with having done virtually zero investigation into it, that Congressman Ted Lieu of California, not a lizard person.
Ted Lieu is the congressperson from California that introduced the anti banning of encryption bill. Oh, it's so weird. It's double negative.
Yeah, the one who saw what another Californian was doing and said, "No, stupid, this." Actually, it wasn't just him. It was Ted Lieu of California and Blake Fahrenholt of Texas, who is a Republican. So this is a bipartisan bill.
Oh, sweet. That's even better.
Ensuring National Constitutional Rights of Your Private Telecommunications Act of 2016.
It stands for encrypt, if I'm remembering right. Or they made
yes, the... encrypt, yeah.
It's great.
It's like Spectre. Like they came up with the acronym first,
right?
And they're like, okay, let's figure out. It's like when you have that thing where you write your name, and then someone writes words to describe you using the letters from your name.
Yeah.
But for legislation.
Yes. I think all legislation should be done in this way. They should have a catchy name that then is an acronym for what it is. Then it's a lot easier to understand.
Yeah.
As long as you don't, use make the acronym be like the opposite of the thing you're actually trying to do. So the short word is encrypt, but then the N really means not or something, and so it negates the whole thing. That'd be real bad. Not a thing. But hopefully Encryption is a thing. Hopefully, being a lizard person is not a thing, but being on the podcast is a thing. So please let us know via whatever means necessary. Twitter, Facebook.
I prefer carrier pigeon.
Yes, carrier pigeons are great. Or drones. Feel free to fly drones at us. Or is that a bad thing?
No, Alan. No. No.
Right. Drones are bad, but there's some drone news today that's really interesting. There's a company called Drone Deploy, and I don't know what else they do, but they put together a webpage recently for a new service that they have, which is if you have access to a drone and you fly it around a building, say your house or, you know, the White House or something like that.
Yeah, I don't think you can do that at the White House.
Maybe not at the White House. But if you flew it around a building and took pictures of that building from multiple angles, it could, if you uploaded all those pictures to this software, it will stitch the images together, and using the data about the location of the drone and the motion control stuff about the angle that it's facing and everything, it will create a 3D model of the thing you're taking a picture of. And this technology has been around for a number of things. I think Microsoft had it for a while, and of course now the name escapes me for the thing that they used to do with it. You could they would take pictures from of like famous architecture and then stitch them together into a 3D model, because invariably people would take pictures from different angles. So if you could combine all of those pictures in a reasonable way, you could get a reasonably good 3D model of that thing. So this company, Drone Deploy, is taking that idea and applying it to aerial photography, specifically from drones, but then they're taking it one step further and not just giving you the 3D file of the thing that you took pictures of, but it's giving you the STL file, which is the 3D printing file, so you could then 3D print the model of the thing that you just took pictures of, like your house or the building. And this is like the ultimate culmination of all of the ridiculous technologies that we've talked about on the show.
Podcast circle jerk is complete.
I think the most appropriate use for this is in heist movies. You have to fly your drone around the bank that you're going to rob with your elaborate plan, and then you use the pictures to get the 3D model that you then put up in the darkened room with a single bulb that you're all gathering around to dole out the responsibilities for breaking into the real building. And then it has to end on the dissolve of the model dissolving to the real thing. We're writing this scene for you, Hollywood. Come on.
I think Hollywood's written that scene already, Alan.
Well, in any case, Drone Deploy, it sounds a little neat, although it is not a thing, because drones are not a thing. Also, don't fly drones around my house and take pictures to use in an eventual 3D model of my house. I think that's weird and creepy, actually, for a number of reasons. sticking in that kind of weird and creepy vibe, there was some interesting news around recognition of emotions. And I thought it would be recognition of emotions by algorithms. We've seen things about that, and there's like facial recognition in cameras, so it'll find the faces in the cameras for focus. And I think Apple even bought a company just recently that not only will find faces in photos, but will also determine the sentiment of those faces. So in theory, it would focus on ones that are more pleasing, so you don't have like the ugly face in focus in your of the, you know, in someone photobombing your photo or something like that. But no, not technology. This is actually good old analog sciences. In fact, animal sciences, horses, apparently. There was research study done about horses and if horses can recognize facial expressions regarded, you know, to or correlated to human emotion. So in a weird and elaborate kind of way, they confirmed this through a study where they showed they wired up a horse to like a heart rate monitor, and they had like the trainer you know, in the pen with the horse to kind of gauge its temperament that way. And then they showed the horse pictures of kind of a happy person and an angry person. And in theory, when they showed the pictures of the angry person, the horse got more agitated, its heart rate went up, and generally acted kind of differently. Whereas when it's a happy person face, it was more relaxed. Weirdly, they also specified in the story that they showed this only to the left eye of the horse. And their idea is that the right brain, which is what the left eye is connected to, the optic nerve actually crosses over in the brain. So the opposite side of the brain takes care of the visual input on that side of the body. And their claim is that the right side of the brain is more attuned to negative emotions, at least in humans, maybe. I'm not sure exactly how they made that leap, but so suffice it to say, if you run into a horse with an eye patch, don't make angry faces at its left eye, because it will, you know that.
Wait, it's left or your left?
It's left, you're right.
Okay, right.
This is why
or just deal with humans recognizing your emotions.
Yes, right. Right, because you're not fooling the horse.
I don't care if I make a horse uncomfortable, Alan.
You're not going to fool the horse, but only on one side of its body. You're just not. It's not a thing. So I don't think this works on humans. I don't think so. I'm not going to go so far as to, you know, wear an eye patch all day and look at photos to see if they make me angry or not. But, you know, I don't know. If a researcher out there wants to write a grant and then let us in on that that grant money, we could work out a publication thing, maybe, you know.
Well, get us a pony. We need a podcast pony. But also you have to pay for upkeep, because I hear horses are very expensive to maintain.
Right. Probably more expensive than podcasts are.
Right. But if we had a podcast horse, we could race it and then win money and then fund the podcast.
I think we're onto something here. We just have to make sure we cover the left eye of the horse for you know, for safety reasons, and everything will be okay. So sticking in the animal sciences is a breakthrough this week in cryonics, which I always read as cryogenics, but I guess cryonics is the new kind of short form, which sounds cooler. It must be a millennials thing to shorten it, you know. Cryonics.
Yeah, you wouldn't understand that.
Yeah, exactly. I don't. I really don't. But cryonics had an advancement this week in that they were able to, a scientist team led by someone from MIT was able to freeze a brain and then thaw it out. And I'm not sure exactly how they determined this, but it left the brain intact. And the reason why, first of all, I guess is our audience even old enough to remember why cryonics is a thing?
Ted Williams.
But so cryonics, right, in theory, is freezing a person before or just or very soon after death in order to kind of in order to retain that body in stasis for the eventual time in the future where the thing that killed that person can be reversed or otherwise fixed, and then the person can live forever, or to at least extract the brain from the person and make a, I don't know, hologram surrogate of that person or whatever.
We've all seen Futurama.
some fanciful future way of getting everyone to live forever, which has no bad consequences in all film, pretty much.
Yep. Everything always works out just fine.
It always works out just fine. But the main problem with cryonics is that the body is made of mostly water, 70-ish% water, and water expands when it's frozen. And that's fine if you're making ice cubes, but when you're trying to freeze any kind of living tissue, it pretty much destroys all the cells. Not because the act of freezing is bad for cells, but the act of the water molecules binding in a larger structure breaks the cell walls and arrangement of things and all sorts of stuff like that. So the way that the scientists did this is really interesting. They add stabilizing chemicals into the brain, and they specifically were just freezing the brain of this test animal, and they used chemicals to change the chemical makeup of the brain enough that when you freeze it, it does not change size or is otherwise disrupted. So in theory, when you unfreeze it and then purge it of those chemicals, everything's fine. And it worked. At least they think it worked on a bunny or a rabbit. I don't know. A hare? Hare-brained idea? too easy. I'm sorry. But they froze a rabbit's brain. So it's a mammal brain. It's sufficiently complex. It's multicellular and all that kind of stuff. So there's hope that they can do something larger. I think the next size up animal wise is a pig's brain for whatever reason. So science marches on as that goes. I'm skeptical of the outcome of how this works, because I think freezing my or anyone's body for science is just going to cause a lot of storage issues.
I would freeze you for science, Alan.
But I kind of like the idea of freezing the brain and then in theory extracting the memories and consciousness. I think there's more interesting stuff in that, although it does stray into some really bad sci-fi, as we were alluding to. Like, I did not see that Johnny Depp movie with the, you know which one I'm talking about?
Yeah, Transcendence.
Yeah.
Wally Pfister's directorial debut, I was thoroughly disappointed by.
Yeah, it just seems like
a bad idea.
Yeah, pretty much. I like that the science is going on, because it can carry over into all sorts of other stuff, which is useful. Like, I think if nothing else, they can figure out a way to keep food fresher.
I like where your head's at, Alan. I mean, yeah, hold it right there. I'm going to remove your brain and freeze it.
So cryonics is still a thing, I guess. Maybe one day we'll be able to extract what that rabbit was thinking the moment before it was killed, and then we'll learn some deep truth about the universe. But until then, we're gonna move over into spoiler territory. about something else involved in brains, and that is zombies. So as I alluded to at the top of the show, I just saw Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, which just came out this Friday. Oddly enough, I had not heard of this as a movie until like when we saw there was a poster for it when we went to go see Hateful Eight, like right after Christmas.
Right.
And I don't remember it being made. There's a bunch of people in it. It's surprising. It was not a low budget movie. It was you know, period piece, Victorian, I think, England. I should probably look that up. I don't actually know. But
if you know when Pride and Prejudice takes place, that's when it takes place.
Yes. So the conceit is that Pride and Prejudice was written by Jane Austen, and then someone in the last, I want to say, 10 years wrote Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, and essentially took Pride and Prejudice and inserted zombie fights into it. And it was enough like Pride and Prejudice that Jane Austen is credited as co-author of the book, which I'm sure her estate is pleased as punch about. But if I remember correctly, it was very faithful to the story of Pride and Prejudice, at least the major kind of characters and interactions. And then all of the zombie fighting was kind of just incidental to the main story that was going on. And the movie version, I feel like, was actually more like a better retelling of the original source material than it was kind of a zombie movie. I mean, I only see the appeal of this as kind of a like, oh, let's add zombies to this thing and it'll make it better, which is a formula that unfortunately has been deployed far too many times in recent memory for shows and movies.
It worked for me. I had never read Pride and Prejudice and probably would have gone on never having read Pride and Prejudice, but I read Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, the book, which written by or co-authored by Seth Graham Smith, who also did Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Yes.
Was a fantastically over the top fun movie.
Right. So I had really high hopes for this movie because Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, while, you know, not a classic movie by any means, was really fun as a movie because the I think the majority of the story felt original, whereas Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, the majority of the story is connected to Pride and Prejudice. So if you're not into the, you know, who likes who and who's trying to vie for each other's affections kind of main thrust of Pride and Prejudice, you're not going to like Pride and Prejudice and Zombies because the zombie bit of it really does feel extra tacked on in the movie version, to the point where of all the things that were done well in the movie, which are characterizations. I mean, they had Lena Headey's in it and Charles Dance, which is great. It's like you got two Lannisters. Let's go. I'm on board. But the actual like costumes and sets and locations, they look great. It's clearly they went, you know, to England and spent almost as much money as the BBC did when they did their Pride and Prejudice retelling, which I consider like the 6-hour miniseries. That's the definitive kind of video version. So go watch that one if you
take
want
your
to.
Word for it.
Yeah, okay, but it looks good. It sounds right. There are dance scenes in the film where there are people doing, you know, the silly courtly dance that's there. But all of that is on beat with the music that's playing. Usually the music is added in post or is otherwise piped in and is just background because it floats between camera angles. But they actually kept the rhythm of everything through the camera angle changes, which I was blown away by for a movie that was ultimately really silly and kind of bad. It was kind of a nice touch. But the thing that really ruined it for me is that the fight scenes are boring. It's just so boring. the opening fight scenes with the Bennett girls, it was all in slow motion, so nothing's at speed. So it looks sort of good, but you want to see them kind of fighting at speed. You never really do. There's a lot, in my opinion, too much shooting for the time. Flintlocks only have one shot. You don't use them as I don't know. It feels like there were.
Wait. Your problem with Pride and Prejudice and zombies is the historical inaccuracy.
I think the historical inaccuracies were used. They decided to use historical accuracy for costumes and stuff, but not really for fighting styles. For example, one of the things they mention in an oddly racist turn is that the rich people send their sons and daughters to learn to fight in Japan, and anyone who's poorer learns to fight in the Chinese styles. And I don't. It's just a weird throwaway line at the beginning of the movie, and I was just like, "What is going on in this movie?" Oh, and also
racism.
Yeah. Also, all white people in this movie. I don't know if that was going to be I don't know why that surprised me, but it did.
It's not Pride and Prejudice and Minorities, Alan. It's Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
So it was kind of a silly film. It hints, and this is not a spoiler, it hints that they want to do kind of a sequel. I really hope that no sequels get greenlit from this. I would much rather watch another Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter movie than this.
Oh, that makes me want to go back and watch that now. I might have to do that later.
Yeah. I would actually recommend it. I think, because I think there needs to be kind of a balance. There usually is a balance of kind of, you know, deep, thought-provoking movie, silly action film. And I think this is too. It tries to be in the middle because they're trying to update the Pride and Prejudice story and make it more interesting to people that would watch a zombie film, I guess. And I think it really fails in that the zombie fighting is not good, and actually the acting is kind of bad for the people that are supposed to be hiding their true affections for each other. They don't seem to be hiding very much. The acting is kind of wooden, so I would miss this one if I were you.
I think it's the same original story. Or not original story. The original story is Pride and Prejudice.
Right.
But Seth Gordon Smith wrote this and Abraham Lincoln. The director of the movie you just saw, he did Igby Goes Down and 17 Again.
Huh.
The director of Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter was Timur Bekmambetov.
Yeah.
Who is crazy. If you've ever seen Night Watch,
yes,
or the series of Night Watch movies, do yourself a favor and do it.
Yeah,
if you've never seen it.
And he directed Wanted.
I think he's from Kazakhstan.
Yeah,
yeah, he did Wanted, Abraham Lincoln, and then the Night Watch movies.
Yeah,
Night Watch and Day Watch.
Yeah, so those are very good and watchable. Pride and Prejudice.
That means he should be due for a movie.
Yeah,
It's been 4 years since he made a movie. He's got to be due. What's he going to make? IMDb says Ben-Hur. What? I would totally watch that version of Ben-Hur. Yes, please.
Well,
that's this year. Oh, Okay, we'll look forward to that. I can't wait for to see that.
Okay, well, we'll hold our breath for that one, and I think we're good. I think I will talk to you next week, Brendan.
Till next time, Alan.